Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
So I thought now would be a good time to catch up with Eric Gargiulo from, of course, CamelClutchBlog.com, since it's been a while since I've actually talked to Eric. In fact, we had tried to do this previously, especially now that he has more free time at night. And
yes.
For whatever reason, the schedule and the moon and the sun did not align, but it did align tonight, didn't it?
It did align tonight. Everything is working in our favor tonight, Brian. And I say that, and I'm probably jinxing us, but yes, everything is working in our favor. As long as I'm not recording the podcast, you're in good shape.
you had a nightmare situation, which, I mean, if you want to say it, you can. But, I mean, we've all been there where we've tried to tape something, and then it didn't tape. I've had that happen to me a couple of occasions. Or I've had the instance where you tape something, and you've been, like, out in the field with a recorder, and you tape something, and then you tape something else, and you don't realize that you taped over the first one.
Oh,
and the first one was an interview with Stephanie McMahon. From when she was still on TV as Vince's little girl, because they were in town to announce that the XFL was coming to your city, and Stephanie just happened to be there and talk to you.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
That's brutal. You know, I hear Steve Austin. It seems like Steve Austin, at least when he was starting podcasting, every couple shows he would talk about how he would record an episode with like John Cena or Dave Meltzer, and something happened and he would mess up his recording. And I would think to myself, how could anybody do that? I mean, I've been doing this. I know you've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this going back to 1998 since I was on the radio doing this kind of stuff. And even before that, you know, I was messing around doing stuff and never happened. And the other night, wouldn't you know it? I had an idea to do a show talking about Madison Square Garden and the history of Madison Square Garden with the network special. And I reached out to one of the guys that wrote the 50 years of Madison Square Garden in history. He was jacked to do the show. We did a podcast. I thought it was great. I had a blast. Anytime I can talk old school, I had a good time, and went to edit it and put it up in the site, and it wasn't there.
Well, that's like a punch in the gut when that
it
happens
is.
Too. By the way, so I know I've told this story on the podcast before, but I don't know if you know about it. You mentioned Meltzer.
Yes.
So you mentioned Meltzer going on with Steve Austin.
Yeah.
I was in the room when that happened.
You were?
Yes.
So, no, you never told me that.
So as the story goes, so I was in L.A. for SummerSlam a year ago.
Okay.
And I have been with Meltzer. We had lunch together with a couple other friends. And Dave goes, hey, I'm going to go to Steve Austin's hotel. He invited me to come on and do his podcast. And I said, well, would you care if I tagged along? And he said, no, come on.
Yeah.
So I go and I meet Steve. And Steve goes, what do you do? And I told him, you know, hey, I've worked in radio. I do podcasts and all stuff. So, of course, he goes, how long have you worked in sports radio? And I go, you know, almost 20 years. So, of course, now Steve's asking me, like, about style and interviews and different things like this. And I go, Steve, what you're doing is great. You've got your own style. You're doing great, my man. So, you know, I'm just gonna be a fly on the wall. I'm going to sit over here on the couch. You guys are going to talk, right? So Steve's got this, you know, he's got his recorder. It's a nice piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. And I've never used it before, but it's not that difficult to look at. And he goes, hey, can you tell me, do I have enough space to record something on here? Like, do I have a lot of time?
Yeah.
I just kind of look at it and I go, oh, yeah, you got plenty of time. You got like 4 hours on here, right?
Oh,
he's like,
no.
Okay. Yeah, you're okay. So I sit on the couch and they're talking. They're talking for like 5 minutes. Steve's cell phone rings. He pauses the recorder and he takes the phone call.
Yeah.
And then he cranks it back up. And, you know, they're talking hour and a half. At one point they were talking about something they both couldn't remember, and like I'm like flashing signs to him over there because it was like a number for something, and she goes, oh, Brian's over there on the couch, Brian from Between the Ropes, let me plug his podcast, and Brian says five and he knows more than all of us. So he's making this big joke and having fun with it or whatever. And then like a half hour later, just like in the middle of a sentence, Steve just stops and he goes, hey, Brian, thought you said I had a lot of time left on this thing. I go, well, what are you talking about? He goes, I don't see the numbers moving anymore. And I go, well, let me look. And I look at it, and I look back up at Steve, and I go, well, Steve, it's not recording. He goes, what do you mean? And I go, Steve, you didn't hit record. And he just looked at me, and he looked down, and he looked like somebody had kicked his dog. I mean, wow. He was just like, oh. And and Dave, like, let out a guttural yell, and so did Steve. Steve was heartbroken. He got up. He kicked. He screamed. And he goes, do we get any of this? And I go, I'm going to say probably not. Let me check. And I go, yeah, you got the first 5 minutes. You didn't hit you didn't hit pause to unpause it when you started after the phone call.
So that was it. That's the phone call.
Whenever, because Meltzer talks about it all the time. So yeah. I was the mysterious third person in the room when that happened.
And you never got your plug then.
I never got my plug. I was going to get a big plug on Steve Austin's podcast.
Wow.
And on top of that, Steve was just like, hey, man, I appreciate your help. I'll be more than happy to come on your podcast whenever you want. I saw him again later that night at the bar of the hotel.
Yeah.
And Steve was laughing. And I go, Steve, don't worry about it. It happens to everybody. I know it sucks. And he goes, I'll come on your podcast, though, Brian. And he has yet to come on my podcast.
Have you tried?
Oh, yeah. I've stopped lately. I don't blame him. I know he's very busy, so it's fine. Like a couple times, he did get back with me like a couple months later because I had hit him up after he did the interview with Vince.
Yeah.
And he was just like, hey, man, he goes, I've been meaning to call you. And he goes, I promise I'll get with you here soon. And he just hasn't had a chance to. And I don't blame him. I'm not mad about it. I laugh about it. I'd love to have Steve on. But I know he's got his podcast and he's got his TV shows and he's got projects. So, I mean, I'll hit him up again at some point and say, hey, do you remember who I am? But, poor guy, man. He's both him and Dave are like heartbroken over that. They swear it's like it was the greatest conversation ever.
Did Meltzer really bang his head against the wall?
Yes, he really did. He did bang his head against the wall. And if you know what, and if it had been Dave from 20 years ago, the hairstyle he had then would have protected his head a lot better.
This is true. Now. That is true. Wow, I had no idea. I did not know that you were in the room.
I was in the room. I was the mystery.
So was it that great of a podcast?
I don't even remember what the hell they were talking about now, quite honestly. It was a lot of like stuff from like the 70s and 80s. It was like old school indie kind of smaller promotion stuff, I think, you know, so.
You know what's funny is I know that they're doing the Observer Hall of Fame stuff going on now.
Yeah.
So it was probably a year ago when I was on your show because I remember I was on your show like the weekend that you had to get like your ballot in and we went over your ballot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should go over my ballot again. Well,
although the deadline has passed.
Well, I mean, I sent it in.
Yeah. Okay.
I just got to find what the hell my picks were. That's the problem.
I would love to go over your ballot.
Hold on 1 second. I'll find it here. I'll find my damn ballot.
Yeah.
That's the problem is finding the ballot. Well, you know what I hate?
What's that?
I got my freaking Gmail. I swear to God, half the time I like send emails and they don't go into my sent folder.
Oh, that Gmail.
I don't see it.
If it's free, just remember, Brian, if it's free, it's allowed to break.
Yeah, I guess, man. I don't see it now. I can't go over my ballot. I wish I knew who was up.
We will never know.
We'll do it the next time because I mean, he's going to announce it here pretty soon.
Yeah, but at least we could have went over your ballot.
Well, I know I got to find this, damn it. I know that I voted for Brock Lesnar.
Okay.
I know that I voted for Sting again.
Did you really?
Yes, I did. I voted for Sting last year, and I have this rule. If you vote for somebody and they do not get in, and if they're retired, or unless they've done like a heinous crime, then no matter what, you have to put them down the following year.
Because, that makes sense.
Because nothing's changed. What has changed about them? Did they? I mean, because they didn't wrestle them because they're retired. Now all of a sudden they're not a Hall of Famer. Once you think they're a Hall of Famer, they're a Hall of Famer.
You know, it's funny too because You know, obviously I've heard the Sting debate for the last couple of years in the Hall of Fame. And originally I thought, well, of course he's a Hall of Famer because he's Sting. But then when you start to hear the argument against it, it's like, wow, maybe he really wasn't a Hall of Famer.
Okay,
after
I got the ballot. I got the ballot. Okay.
Okay, good.
So here's who I voted for. Because I can remember who I voted for. Because I think you can vote for 10, and I think I voted for 8. Okay. I voted for the Assassins. I voted for...
You voted for them last year, I think, too.
Yes, I did. Yeah. First timer, I voted for Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson. Okay. I did vote for him, which I had a conversation with another fellow voter, and we had a discussion about it because I think he was on the fence.
Yeah.
I voted for Edge.
Okay.
I voted for Brock Lesnar.
Okay.
I voted for Sting.
Okay.
I voted for Shinsuke Nakamura.
Okay.
I voted for Gene Okerlund.
Okay.
And I voted for Gary Hart.
Not bad. I mean, I can't really argue with any of those picks except Daniel Bryan. I don't really know, but
well, here's the ones that people were on the fence on that we had a conversation about. Okay, so Daniel Bryan was one of them. Mm-hmm. Ivan Koloff was one of them. Mm-hmm. Randy Orton was one of them. Mm-hmm. CM Punk was one of them.
Okay.
And AJ Styles. I did not vote for AJ. I want another year out of AJ, and then I'll vote for him. I didn't vote for Ultimate Warrior. Mm-hmm. You know what? Big Show is somebody you could actually give some conversation about, but I didn't vote for Show.
And, yeah, I think so.
And the biggest argument was, if you vote for Daniel Bryan, do you also have to vote for CM Punk or vice versa? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. They've had similar careers in a lot of different ways. But I didn't want to vote for CM Punk. It's not a personal grudge or anything. I just felt like Daniel Bryan's done a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I probably wouldn't vote for either of them. And that's, you know, and I say that as a big Daniel Bryan fan. And who knows? I mean, maybe there's a whole other 10 chapters to be written about his career. I mean, let's hope so. But as of right now, who knows? I don't know. It's an interesting one. So back to Gary Hart. I just recently finished his book. Have you ever read Gary Hart's book?
I have not, but I've heard a lot about it. So I did a lot of research on Gary.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. You know, I met Gary. I actually worked with Gary Hart down in MLW.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was when I was down in MLW for that weekend of shows, he was the booker, and he was a super cool guy. I mean, the guy couldn't have been a more cool guy to be around. Really nice guy. He wound up doing my radio show. Really nice guy. Very organized. Very organized. But I read his book, and his book is His book might be next to Brett's, the best wrestling book, the most thorough wrestling book that I've ever read. Now, that said, I think there's a lot of my BS meter went up a couple of times just as an old school fan, having watched some of that stuff that he talked about and saying, yeah, I don't quite remember it that way, Gary. And everybody's allowed to have their version of the truth. But other than that, I thought the book was maybe the most comprehensive book on wrestling history that I've ever read.
Yeah, you know, I've heard great things about it. I need to get a copy of it to read. But you know, I did some background research on Gary, and I talked to some other people. So, you know, I've been voting for him the last couple of years because I've been a voter now for like 4 or 5 years. Edge is somebody. The second he was on the ballot, I voted for. And you know, sometimes like when I send in a ballot, I will also write something about why I voted for the person. Sometimes,
okay.
Sometimes I just send in the names.
Yeah.
But when Edge was on there, and I voted for him the first time, I wrote this like impassioned thing about why Edge should be in the Hall of Fame. You know,
because
I talked about it. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, was, you know, part of tag team wrestling in WWE during a huge period of time when it was Edge and Christian and the Hardys and the Dudleys, and there was some other fringe teams too, and they were main eventing shows, and they were having huge impacts on pay-per-views as well. And then he went off from that and had a very, very successful singles run, including he headlined WrestleMania 24. He headlined SummerSlams and other pay-per-views. He was one of the best heels that we had seen during that time, you know, in the mid to late 2000s. You know, and just in a time where people didn't really embrace being a heel and what a heel should be. So I like wrote this big thing about it. And of course he hasn't gotten in yet. And I don't know if he's going to get in, but yeah, Edge is somebody that he's like my guy that I've like gotten behind and would like to see him get in.
It's interesting. You know, I mean, it's a funny thing. I remember when he went into the WWE Hall of Fame, I remember thinking at the time that it was too soon, but then when you really look at the guys in the Hall of Fame, why not? You know, when I think of Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, you know, it's a tough one. I mean, it just really.
Well, let me ask you this then. Do you look at the WWE Hall of Fame and the Observer Hall of Fame differently?
I do. I look at the wrestling. I take the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame a little more seriously.
Yep, I do too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I think it has a lot more credibility. I was saying a little, but I actually think it has a lot more credibility.
The way that I look at it is the WWE Hall of Fame is for fans.
Yes.
And the Observer Hall of Fame is for the people that truly deserve to be enshrined as the best of the best.
Yeah, and the other thing too, at least in the Observer Hall of Fame, you know, Dave's not making the picks. He has a lot of people weighing in on these picks, where the WWE is putting in whoever they want, or whoever they and are leaving out whoever they want at the same time.
Right. So yeah, and there's obviously some politics and everything that goes there. So. Yeah, those are the ones that I picked this year, and there's a couple others. I mean, that was a big class for me. Normally eight. I think that's what I had was eight. That's pretty big for me. But yeah, I mean, Steve Austin's probably gonna you know freaking stun me because I didn't put Ivan Koloff in there. and you know what? I had a conversation with somebody about Randy Orton, and I thought about it. You know, that might be one of those where you appreciate Randy a lot more. Once he's retired or closer to retiring, and I like Randy a lot. I'm a fan of Randy Orton. I think his work in the ring has been exceptional, but still, it just feels like something is missing to really push him over the edge there.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think if you're going to put Daniel Bryan in the Hall of Fame, you absolutely have to put Randy Orton in the Hall of Fame.
You might be right. Well, the whole thing with Daniel Bryan, and I looked at it from a couple of different angles, is I'm like, I hope I'm not doing this from a fan standpoint. I want to be, you know, real about this. I want to be thorough about it. And I don't want that to creep in. I want it to be, does this guy deserve it, and why does somebody else not then?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think about, I'm a little late to the game, but I was just reading today that Daniel Bryan's career is at a real serious crossroads.
Yeah, so as the story goes, and I talked to Daniel before Mania, and he did a lot of interviews, or actually when his book came out a few months ago. So, and in the book, he chronicles he's had a lot of concussions. So he says, I've, you know, been checked out by a doctor that works with the NFL, has done stuff at the Super Bowl. He cleared me. WWE's doctor has not cleared me, and I'm assuming that's Dr. Joseph Maroon.
Yeah.
So basically, they're at an impasse, and he wants to wrestle. So now they've said, we're going to go find a third doctor. You're going to get checked. If he gives you the green light, you can wrestle. If he doesn't, then you're not. And I know Daniel did an interview with IGN, and he was talking about, well, you know what? I still want to wrestle, you know, and I'm kind of in the lucha libre right now. And I'd like to, but, you know, his contract, he's still got like 3 years left on his contract. So, but at the same time, he said, well, who am I to go against the doctor? And, you know, maybe I should retire if he doesn't clear me. So it's going to be very interesting. And it's definitely at an impasse. So I don't even know when he's going to see that doctor. I assume within the next month.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what it seems like. It's quite a story. It really is when you think back on it. And I mean, I feel bad, you know, on one hand, I certainly feel bad for the guy. And then on the other hand, I feel like he not only did he live his dream, he lived just about everybody else's dream. And even though it was short lived, he got to live it. And it's kind of hard to feel sorry for a guy who had that kind of run, short as it was, but he still had it.
Oh, absolutely. And even if he does go back, and I can't blame WWE for this,
right?
You wonder what kind of role he is going to have. Like, I mean, he's going to be so popular, they're going to have to push him to some extent, but he will never be a guy that'll be the world champion. They will never put him in that position. He's U.S. title, IC title, but he's fine with that. I mean, hell, he's talked about how his plan was when he was the when he won the IC title at Mania. He didn't want to be on Raw. He wanted to be on SmackDown.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, the stage is set for a really fun feud with him and Kevin Owens if he can come back. I mean,
right?
There's really a lot of cool stuff that he can do when he comes back. I mean, he hasn't had his run with Seth Rollins yet.
That's the one that I would really like to see, too.
Yeah. I mean, there's still a lot that he can do. Man, it's quite a crossroads. I mean, I don't know what I mean, you know, there's that feeling. It's a much different situation. I mean, much, much, much different situation, but it almost reminds me of the Kurt Angle deal, where Kurt Angle was at a point with the WWF for much different reasons, where they wouldn't let him wrestle anymore due to his health reasons. And he had to go and do what he had to do to get cleared. And he wound up going to TNA. And I remember at the time that Dixie came out and said she wasn't going to let him do anything that would put himself in jeopardy. And everybody was saying, you know, how could anybody give this guy a job when he's one bump away from breaking his neck or with the, you know, whatever his demons were. And it could be a Daniel Bryan situation. It could be the same situation for Daniel Bryan, where he leaves and it's, you know, it's like you want to see him move on. But at the same time, it's like you cringe every time the guy gets in the ring for his health.
Yeah. And he had said that he had devised a plan to change his style, that he knew he had to do that. So I'm curious what that is. But we all know that you're always going to go back to different bad habits. You
yes.
know, you're always going to go back to that. And, you know, to me, it's obvious you've got to cut out the, you know, the diving headbutt out the top rope, maybe
sure.
even the knees in the corner, from a standpoint that when he was doing that, I mean, he was falling on the back of his neck and his head.
You're
so,
right.
You know, maybe that would have to be something that he would have to cut out as well. So, and the funny thing is, he can adjust his style, and I still think people would be super excited about him. I don't think it would change his popularity one bit, because he's good enough and he's creative enough where he can do that. It's funny you mentioned this stuff with Kurt, because when that happened, remember the whole thing was, my body's in such bad shape, and
yes.
you want me to wrestle all the time, and you won't give me a break, and I can't handle this. And he had the breakdown in Vince's office, and he got out of his contract. And it wasn't too long after that he was debuting in TNA.
Yes, yes, yes.
And remember when he did those promos where he was like, you know, he's sitting in an empty warehouse and he had the American flag draped over him as he sat in a chair.
With a mouth guard.
Yeah, and he was mouthing off about WWE and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that was strong stuff. I was in the room when that happened.
Were you really?
Yeah, that's another one of my
You've been in a lot of rooms.
Yeah, somehow I found my way in this. Well, what happened there was, I don't think, so there was probably only like 8 people in the room. And
okay.
that was when TNA, I mean, it was down here. It was at Sound Stages, right? So they used to be, TNA did Impact and Sound Stage 21. That's the Impact Zone. There was at the time.
Was this for like the 2 weeks that you're on good terms with them?
I was on good terms for a little bit longer than them, but yeah. this is when I was the AOL fan house stuff where they were kissing my ass.
There you have it.
There you go. but I think what happened was, so there was like, you know, it was like only like 8 people or something there. So somebody was going in there into this other soundstage where they're doing it. And I didn't even know what was going on. He goes, hey, come here with me. You want to see something? I was like, okay. So we go in there, and I think like Dixie was there, Jeff was there. But like, it was so dark except where Kurt was. I don't think anybody saw me.
Yeah.
So like, we're up against the wall, and he's like, just be quiet. I was like, okay. And we're watching this, and we're watching Kurt, you know, and he's just like, WWE did this, and he's cussing and everything. And I'm like, oh, what's going on here, man? I was like, I didn't know Kurt was in here, you know, and he's cutting promos at WWE and getting ready for, you know, his debut and everything. Because I think after he debuted, they did like this 2-part series on Impact of interviews with him. And that was strong stuff. And I was in the room for part of it.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, weird stuff happened back then, man.
Yeah, weird stuff happens today.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff that happens today.
You have CM Punk going on Twitter, ranting about the Susan G. Komen Foundation in the middle of Raw.
Here's the thing, okay? And I know that Punk is trying to say, hey, I'm not picking on wrestling, you know, I'm picking on the Foundation. But you are picking on wrestling because you're calling out, you're criticizing this Foundation because other people, because right now they're doing their partnership with WWE. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And that's why this whole thing came to a, you know, why that conversation came up in the first place is because WWE's partnering with them and it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny too, because I saw today, I don't know if it was on Twitter or Facebook or somewhere, but there were a bunch of pictures of Punk with pink t-shirts when he was in WWE promoting the Susan G. Komen.
Yes, which everybody has to do, you know. Yeah. So, and he's got the smile on his face. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's a hypocrite or anything like that, but we know why the timing of it came up is because it's that time of the year again. So, and you know what? For everybody, I would encourage, go out and do your own research on Susan G. Komen, because I've heard different things as well, but you know, it's to each their own. You know, there has been some things when it comes to how much of their money is going towards research or going towards helping and how much is going to CEOs. So, I mean, but everybody do your own research and come to your own conclusion on it.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? It's that's exactly it. I mean, when it comes to charity, I mean, I like to think that charity is a personal thing. I don't think it's something that you know, you throw money towards just because you see it on TV. I think that there are a lot of good charities that could use your money. And if you spent, you know, 5 minutes putting some logical thought behind it and doing some research, you know, your money could go to some good causes. If for whatever reason you decide you want to buy a pink Randy Orton shirt and 5% of that is going towards research and 10% of that's going towards the CEO. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know. I think that I think there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot more awareness about the disease, and I don't know. It's just it's wrestling. It's, you know, it's not really the place, nor does anybody really care about debating the merits of the Susan G. Komen Foundation.
Right. Can you imagine, though, if they made Bray Wyatt wear a pink shirt for this?
They should.
You really think so?
I mean, I say that I say that tongue in cheek. Okay. You know, it's
well, that's the question. It's like, how much do you do stuff that supports a charity when there's this? We're in a day and age of transparency when it comes to wrestling.
Yeah.
But so how much do you do things that would not be heelish and you're supporting a charity or whatever, and to, you know, to help support them? Or how much do you, quote unquote, protect the business and have certain characters not wear the pink clothing or, you know, talk, you know, even in PSAs or whatever?
Well, I mean, listen, here, this has been a bone I've picked on the Camel Clutch blog now for about 2 years. You don't have to look much further than the top of the company when it comes to that hypocrisy, because, you know, you have Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, who love to put themselves out there in the front of charity, in the front of Connor's Cure, in the front of the Special Olympics. They love to put themselves out there, but wait a minute, but they're the heels, and they're dastardly, and they're against the good guys, and you're supposed to boo them, but we're really not bad people. We support the Special Olympics, and we support Connor's Cure. I mean, quite honestly, as an old school wrestling fan, it makes me want to vomit in my mouth every time I see them do that. I mean, just what was it yesterday? Triple H, you know, we're recording this on Thursday, so it was just last night, Wednesday. Triple H is in the ring holding up, you know, the Divas or the Next Girl's hands up. What was her name? Bayley and Sasha Banks,
right,
after their Iron Woman match. You know, and even prior to the start of the Divas Revolution, you would have Stephanie coming out on the NXT shows and putting over how good these are. And, you know, and Triple H, you know, always, you know, showing you wink, wink, nod, nod, you know, what a good guy he is. And I mean, it makes me sick, quite honestly. And I don't know how you can run a business that way. If you're trying to promote this fantasy product, and I remember I wrote in one of my blogs, you know, for example, it's, you know, 24, you know, you're watching 24. I'm a 24 fan, and you get caught up in the show, and they always have their heels, and it's always somebody trying to blow up the world,
right.
And it's usually somebody with a foreign accent, and they do these heinous things, but yet. Could you imagine if, like, in the middle of the show, they're promoting that person is taking time out to promote the Special Olympics and promote this and show what a good guy he is? I mean, it just wouldn't work, you know. This is your job, you know. If you want to be the number one heels in your company, that's great, you know. But then you can't be out there endorsing, charities and things like that. And if you want to be the face of charity for your company, that's fine too, but don't expect me to pay, you know, $20 a month to see somebody, you know, to see the good guy, kick your butt, because quite honestly, I'm not buying it. And I think there are plenty of people that don't. And again, it's probably the biggest pet peeve that I have with WWE today.
Well, the funny thing is that even when we see him on character and you cut out the charitable things, mm-hmm. I can't tell if they're babyface or heel because it switches back and forth every week just from what they're doing in characters. Oh, we're the authority and Seth Rollins is our handpicked guy. Oh, yeah. But we're going to put him in a handicap match and we're going to put him in this and we're not going to protect him here and we're going to put him in matches against the Demon Kane, even though he's deathly afraid of Kane, you know? And I'm like, one week they're, you know, dancing with a New Day, and the following week Stephanie is pissed at New Day because she's on a phone call and she doesn't want them disrupting that. So I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, same thing. You know, I mean, I was at a SmackDown taping in Philly and Stephanie's in the ring dancing with somebody, with Booker T and somebody else. And it's like, I just don't get it. And here's a guy, you know, Vince McMahon that, you go back to what? It wasn't that long ago. Well, I guess it was that long ago. I guess it was 20 years ago. It seems like it was yesterday, the curtain call, the click curtain call. And now you have curtain calls practically every week in some way, shape, or form. And it's just funny how things have changed. And I don't know why, because wrestling's not different. It's still fiction. It's still fantasy. It's still trying to engage your customer in a way that persuades them to check their reality at the door. And they do. And, you know, I mean, people knew what the gig was in wrestling forever, but, you know, they just wanted to go and have a good time. But yet when you're constantly rubbing it in their face like that, it's like, why bother at that point?
Did you have a problem with the curtain call at NXT Brooklyn or at the TakeOver Respect show?
Yeah, I thought it was stupid. I don't get it. It's become this cool thing to give the standing ovation at the end of these great matches. It's become the cool thing over the last couple of years. I almost think it goes back to Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair at WrestleMania. But that made sense. And, you know, they give them they do these curtain calls, and then the next night on Raw, they show up, working each other in a feud as if they hate each other. You're like, wait a minute. I saw them celebrating in the ring with each other. I think it's stupid. You know, at the end of the day, what's more important, your future or going out there and taking a bow? You'll have your bow and you'll have your moment at some other point in your career if you're that good. But right now, especially if you're one of those girls, you need to be focusing on your future and you need to be engaging these fans in your storylines. When you go out there and do something like that, you know, I think it's indie-ish. I mean, I think of the indies. I think when I was doing commentary on the indies, and guys would do that all the time on the indies, and I'd say, why would you do that? You know, you guys just went out there, you had this feud, and you had this great match, and you're sitting there hugging each other and taking a bow, and yet, you know, this indie company is investing whatever money in you in WWE. They're investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in you. I just don't get it. I really don't.
Would you have had as big a problem with it if it wasn't on, if they did it, but after the show had ended?
After the show had ended and the cameras were off?
Yes.
Is that what you mean? I wouldn't have as big a problem with it, but honestly, I mean, I think it's the same thing because then at that point, you're killing the town. And I know, you know, I mean, I probably sound like grandpa on here talking about killing the town, but I mean, at the end of the day, essentially, that's what you're doing. You know, you have this full house and you have these people that are engaged and you have these people that are into your match and the cameras come off and these 15,000, 10,000, however many they are, And it's like, okay, guys, you know, cameras are off, wink, wink. And you expect them to come back next month. And I'm sure a good deal of them will, but some of them might not. So, you know, what would be, you know, what would be better, better for business, for lack of a better word, would be, you know, leaving and setting something up for a rematch, because, you know, you just saw this great match. So why wouldn't you want to see more and buy into that storyline? It's just like, I mean, I go back to that NXT take that Brooklyn show, and you had Sasha and Bayley, and you had really some really good couple of weeks of television there between the two of them building that up. And then they go and have that curtain call. And it's like, man, you had all of that momentum right there. I mean, what a heel Sasha would have been, you know, for Bayley to attempt to hug her or give her a high five or something, and for Sasha to slap her or walk away or give her the finger. I mean, what a heel. And you know what? Hug in the locker room. You know, I mean, go to the locker room. I mean, I witnessed plenty of guys coming back from the locker room giving each other hugs and the locker room giving standing ovations. Why you need to do it in front of 15,000 people is beyond me. Go back in the locker room and do it.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn about it. I understand. I mean, at least it's not with the main roster, and obviously they're doing it with NXT, but NXT has grown so much. And it's one of these things where it's like, well, we're doing this because – these are like our Uber fans, and they're kind of all in on it and everything. I mean, heck, even look at, you know, Respect. I understand it's a little kid, but they got that little girl Izzy there, and she's sitting there crying during the match, and they keep showing her about how she's Bayley's number one fan, and Sasha and Sasha's screwing with her during the match.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then afterwards, after the cameras stopped rolling, she made up with Izzy. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I mean, it's a little bit different because, you know, she's a kid. But
of course.
There is the argument to, you know, kayfabe being dead. I mean, you know, are we too inside on this? Do fans have a perspective that they shouldn't have? You know,
yeah.
And do the companies play up to it too much?
Are we too inside? That's a really great question. That's a really good question. Are we too inside? Yeah, I do think so.
I would say yes. And with NXT, they cater to that. And I understand that because they're sitting there going, hey, you know what? You guys are the greatest fans. You understand everything. You understand it's a show. You're going to react and everything. But then, you know what? We're all in on it. We all know you guys can see behind the curtain, so we don't have as big of a problem here.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely way too inside. I always think that I always scratch my head when I see like somebody on TV trying to make an inside reference, and it's like, you know, for who, for what? You know, I mean, I thought that, I thought CM Punk was a guy that was a little bit too inside when he was active in the WWE with some of the things that he would say on promos, because, you know, going out and laying down this pipe bomb and saying, you know, hi, Colt Cabana, Ring of Honor. It's like for the majority of the audience, they have no idea what you're talking about, nor do they really care at that point. And I know people talk about it as one of the greatest promos of all time. I don't think it was anything special. You know, I mean, cut me a promo in character, selling your feud, selling your match, and give me something to think about that I could relate to, not start throwing terms and names and promotions around that I've never heard of. And I'm just picking on him. But I think in general, I think, you know, guys get a little bit too inside in that regard.
Well, let me ask you this then. This is a way to transition into this, because so with WWE as of late, when it comes to Raw, the ratings have been down. They've been historically low numbers for Raw over the past month. If you don't count holidays, and especially since they've expanded to 3-hour shows. So they've had this problem. With NXT, obviously NXT is a much smaller brand. Even when they go and do house shows, they're doing smaller buildings. Even though they did sell out Brooklyn, and there's obviously a buzz about it, and there was probably a lot of people that watched the TakeOver Respect show. Mm-hmm. And the question I have is, so Triple H did this conference call on Tuesday, and he even talked about WWE is pop music and NXT is grunge.
Okay.
You know? So that's the way he compared it, because he said it's a different audience, in that the ones that follow NXT, they're super into it. They're going to go above and beyond to support their thing. They're you know, that's their thing. That's cool. You know, we help make this, whatever.
It's a horrible comparison considering the fact that grunge has been dead for about 10 or 15 years.
Right. But then when it comes to pop is something that everybody can like. It's like one of those things. It's got a wider audience, you know, kind of thing. That's the way he was looking at it. Like, it's, there's like a specific narrow thing and something that's open to a wider audience. But the way that I kind of look at it, and I wonder about this. So we see the style of booking and how it's different between the shows. And I do understand NXT's only got an hour show each week. And Raw has, you know, 3 hours, plus there's 2 hours of SmackDown. So it's a little bit different. But if we're going this route where we look at our audience in a different way, especially when it comes to NXT, and I think it's a lot more of a sophisticated audience. Mm-hmm. Then, and we see that those things are working on that brand. Why do we not incorporate some of that on our flagship show on Raw? And yes, I do understand is that wider net of an audience. And some of those people, and a lot of those people, are not watching NXT. But it's almost like using it for a test subject, seeing if it's working here. And I'm not saying you have to copy it, but you could take a lot of those elements and you see what's working in NXT is that we're building up these characters, we're really building up storylines. You know, there's some talking, but a little bit less. Let them be strong in the ring, you know, and especially when it comes to the women, and that's how that whole thing took off. Why do they not incorporate more of that into the way that they book Raw?
I definitely I agree with you in that I think that they are desperately lacking an edge or lacking the edge that they've had when they've made an impact, when they've made a difference, when they've drawn ratings. I mean, they have no edge anymore. There's no characters that are edgy. There are no storylines that are edgy. There are no parts of the program that are edgy. I mean, it's very stale. It's very vanilla. It's, you know, my niece is 9 and she's a huge WWE fan. And that's, you know, that's who likes WWE these days. You know, she can totally, you know, she's 9, but she can get everything that they're doing, like all the feuds and everything. Like, she understands and she gets it. And that's what they're doing. They're booking to 9 and 10 and 11 and 12 year olds. And
well, they are, but they're also, I think the two age groups that they look at the most is that really young or people over 40, like 30, 45. And it's like, shouldn't you be booking towards the 18 to 25 year old?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard that before about them, that they
like
focus
their median
on the
age for Raw is like 42 or something, or it might even be older than that. Hell, it might be 47.
Yeah, and I don't get that, because I'm thinking somebody in their 40s that's watching WWE Raw is probably somebody that grew up – like, I don't think you get into wrestling when you're, you know, in your late 40s. I think I think you've watched it by that point. And I just can't – I can't relate to anybody that would sit down and watch Raw who watched wrestling, you know, 20 years ago and think that that's good and be entertained by that, especially for 3 hours. I mean, and that's not to say – that there are certain parts of Raw that I don't find entertaining. I mean, there are definitely high spots, you know, at times throughout the weeks. I mean, that Bray Wyatt Roman Reigns match was very good 2 weeks ago. I mean, Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman are always good for what they're worth. But at the end of the day, as a whole, the package doesn't do it for me. And it amazes me that they, you know, they cater this old fan base, because I go on the network and I've been a network subscriber since day one, and they put on all their old school content, and they've hardly updated it since then. So, it's really interesting. I don't know what do you think that they do to turn the ratings around? Do you think that's what it is? They bring an NXT like edge to it?
I don't know. I mean, there's going to come to a point where they're going to have to change something, and I think Triple H looks at it going, we need to change, because like I said, when it comes to the audience, it's a more sophisticated audience than they've ever had before. And I think the main roster, or the main audience that watches Raw, I think they would adapt more. I'm not saying that you're going to go, hey, we're going to change everything and make it just like NXT. But I think there is something to, we're still going to have plenty of talking segments, but they're going to be shorter segments. There's going to be a little bit more edge, but it's not going to be anything close to the Attitude Era. And we're going to make sure that everybody sees these guys as strong wrestlers as well, strong personalities. And we're going to protect them better when we push them, when we book them. We're not going to do this even Steven booking as much, and which I know I'm asking for a lot here.
You are asking for a lot.
I'm asking for a lot. But what kills me a little bit about all this is, you know, your audience is always going to change. You need to adapt with your audience because, I mean, wrestling has changed in so many different ways, but yet there is still some of this, okay, we give the audience what they want, but only once it gets to that breaking point. Up until that point, we're going to tell them what they want. And let's see if it ever gets to that breaking point. And we all know where that comes from. I mean, that's Vince McMahon. And that's why when we sit here and we talk about, you know, things that are trying to work and, you know, what's not working, it's, hey, let's go back to the big guys. Oh, we got Kane and we got Big Show and then we got Braun Strowman. And where is that coming from? I mean, does today's audience want that or not? Because if we get this, you know, as has been rumored and whether or not it happens or not, if we get a Undertaker Braun Strowman match, or I know you suggested in a column, maybe it would be Taker and Sting against Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman. But if we get that at a WrestleMania, that sucks. I'm sorry. It sucks.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. I mean, I'm kind of jumping around a bit, but how much blame, if any, do you put on Seth Rollins' title reign on the ratings?
Well, I think Seth has done anything and everything that he can with it. I think that they shouldn't put him in long promo segments. And it's not because he can't cut a promo. It's just people get tired of that. And I think here's the biggest thing that I think where they've hurt Seth.
Yeah.
Seth is a first-time champion. And I think that when you are a first-time champion and it's somebody that's, you're not a transitional champion, you're going to be a long-term champion or somebody that could is going to win it multiple times.
Yeah.
That you have to protect that person better to make sure that the audience accepts them as being the world champion, as being the top dog. And I think that's where the question marks come in. And it's not with the way that he won it because he was a heel and everything. Yeah. It's the way that they've used him since then. And when you get into, it's not even the, oh, you know, he's a chicken heel and things like that. It's when they put him in some of these awkward segments, and especially, and I know wins and losses don't matter, but yeah, they do sometimes. And this is one of those instances where they do, where you get into these things now where, what is it, like his last nine televised matches?
Something like that,
He's only won one of them, you know, between TV and pay-per-view and even the Madison Square Garden special. So they're not booking him as being a great world champion, or at least a world champion. It's like, how the hell is this guy still world champion? But he wins his matches. He just finds ways to win matches. Like, and then that's what happened with Ric Flair back in the day. So, so to me, when you were a first-time champion, you have to be protected a lot better. And WWE hasn't done a good enough job of protecting him.
No. Well, according to Seth Rollins, I don't know what I'm talking about because he told me to suck it in Rolling Stone when they showed him an article that was written on my website that said what a horribly booked champion that he was. So according to him, people like you or I should suck it. But that said,
it's funny because I talked to Seth during that shortly after that happened, because it was at the 2K event that they did up in New York and SummerSlam.
Yeah. Yeah, and did you ask him anything about the way that he was booked? I mean, I don't know how you can delicately ask.
I asked him about, you know, how the championship run has gone. He was like,
how's the nine match losing streak going?
Well, it was before that happened, though, because it was at SummerSlam. So he was like, oh, it's been great. And I talked to him about promos. He goes, I've surprised myself even with, you know, how much time they've given me, and I think I've stepped up to the plate when it comes to the promos. And I'm sorry, John Cena, for breaking your nose. And, you know, we talked about stuff like that. But, yeah, I know I should have brought that up. I should have said, so this column said that you're being wasted. Because, you know what, I think at the same time, he is trying to be a company guy. But, I mean, we're going to look at it as a different perspective. And he's sitting there probably thinking, hey, man, I want to be a company guy. But at the same time, I'm the world champion. But things have definitely changed a little bit since then. I mean, he's still the world champion. It's just how much of the ratings do you blame on him because they haven't protected him?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know. I read somewhere. I don't know. I mean, you know how sometimes you don't know if it's somebody speculating or if it's somebody reporting. But I read somewhere that they're starting to point fingers at him. And, you know, I mean, I've said this, you know, and what he missed in my article. I've said this about him, and I've said this about other guys that have failed there. I don't blame them. You know, their talent, they show up, And it's up to the writers to put them in a better place. And I've heard old school guys say, it's up to these guys to go out there and get over. They got to get themselves over. Guys like Steve Austin will say that. But you know what? At the end of the day, you can only do so much. I mean, you can't write your own stuff. And with the way that guys are booked these days, they're not getting over, and nor should they, nor would you expect them to. I mean, it's so funny because the formula is so simple. I mean, really, I mean, anybody could really book wrestling after you watch it for a little while. I mean, the formula is really simple. You book a guy strong, you get him a bunch of wins, and you portray him to be this unbeatable character, and then you have another guy that you're booking the same way, and then at some point fans are going to want to see this dream match of these two unbeatable guys. I mean, it's not rocket science. I mean, Vince's dad did that. Vince did that for many years. And yet they fail to do this with this even Steven booking, as they like to call it. I mean, it's nobody's going to get over this way. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. I mean, one could even argue even Brock Lesnar. If Brock Lesnar was coming in today and he was doing jobs every other week, how effective would he be? I mean, he'd still be over because he's Brock Lesnar, but would he be as over as he is today? I don't know. But it's not working. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you know, I don't know what it's going to take to get to that breaking point and you know, what the changes would be. I mean, and we sit here and we talk about, well, you know, they're giving the audience what they want. That's what they'll always claim. But then I'm not saying Cesaro should be world champion, but I'll just use him as an example because he was a guy was starting to get over and you're seeing the Cesaro section. They've got something that's organically growing here. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you would think, hey, let's push this guy, you know,
yeah.
let's protect this guy. And they were putting him on TV every week, but he was the guy that was having these fantastic matches, but losing. Because wins and losses, you know, they don't matter when they do matter. Once you are a made guy, once you're a made man, then they don't matter. Or they don't matter as much, okay?
I don't even know that that's true. I think wins and losses are always going to matter.
Sure,
I really do.
I don't think they matter as much, but they definitely do matter. I mean, because remember, there was that stretch where Jericho came back and he was just like, it doesn't matter if I lose every match now. And then he started to lose every match and it was like, some of the luster's coming off there.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the thing. It's just like, you know, wins and losses. I mean, isn't that like the secret of Shawn Michaels' career is that he figured out that wins and losses do matter, and that's why he became a star, or one of them, besides obviously being incredibly talented, you know?
Sure.
But, I mean, wins and losses do matter, and especially when you're talking about champions or even making guys, you know? People do not want to keep supporting somebody if they lose all the time. That's called a comedy act, okay?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Or it's called a jobber. You know,
yeah.
And when it comes to Cesaro, people wanted to get behind him. And yes, he's having fantastic matches, but he was losing all the time. And then now, for whatever reason, we don't even see him on TV hardly. I guess the word on the street supposedly is that he's in the doghouse, but I don't know what the hell he did.
How could he be in the doghouse? He doesn't do anything.
I know. That's what I'm like. What did he do? I mean, was he sharing his tips on coffee to Vince and Vince didn't like it or something? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, Brian. I mean, it seems so easy to fix, yet every week they just keep making it worse and worse.
Yeah. Couple of things here. So you watched TakeOver Respect.
I did not. I did not watch it.
You haven't watched it yet?
I haven't watched it yet. I could lie to you and tell you that I have watched
it.
No,
don't then. Well, it's a good thing that we weren't just doing this podcast to talk about that. Dear Lord.
Yeah, I know. I thought I should probably warn you about
that's how about much prep that. Work we did for this. We just kind of like, let's talk about whatever, you know. Well, let me ask you this then.
Yes.
When it comes to the NXT brand and where they're at right now, because we keep seeing them bring in different people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, but, you know, Cowboy James Storm debuted at NXT tonight.
I just read that as we were talking here at the beginning of the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can't imagine. Listen,
I can't believe he's still using the name James Storm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that shows you what kind of plans they have for him, which is probably none. Listen, if they're not going to do anything with Samoa Joe more than push him as a top guy in NXT, they're certainly not doing anything more with James Storm other than, you know, put him out there on NXT to work with the young guys and, you know, get a familiar face out there. It is kind of funny, though, because we heard for all of these, you know, for the last like 2 years that anybody that works in TNA is not getting hired in Titan. I never believed that for a second. But yet, you know, there were those out there that promoted that mantra as if it was fact. But yet you have all these guys showing up every couple of months that have worked in TNA.
Yeah, I've been a firm believer, too. And I know people don't like to hear this, but unless something really weird happens, I think Samoa Joe's always going to be in NXT, and that's what he was hired for.
Agreed. Yes.
Let me throw this thing out there, though. Little curveball. Of these three names, which one do you think has the best chance of ever having even a short run on the main roster? James Storm.
No.
Samoa Joe. Asuka.
Who was the other one?
Asuka.
Probably Asuka.
Really?
Probably Asuka.
Probably have to agree with you.
And it's not because I don't. It's not because I'm not a bigger fan of Samoa Joe, because if it were up to me, I'd certainly put him out there.
Yeah.
You know, the thing with Samoa Joe, it's, I don't know. I feel like if he was going to be on there, he would have been on there by now. I mean, I don't understand why they were in such a rush to sign him before. I mean, all right, let me take this back a step. Look at Finn Balor as an example. Finn Balor is a guy that's making, main roster money. He's making big money to be on the NXT roster, which I don't know. There's something wrong with that to me. I think at some point, you know, when these guys come in, especially a guy as talented as Finn Balor, there's no reason he should still be on the NXT roster.
He doesn't even want to go to the main roster. He's like adamant saying,
"Would you?"
He goes, "I want to stay in NXT. I like what we're doing here. I feel like it's something special."
And he's getting paid the same. He's getting paid main roster money. You know,
or
I would love to hear
it at least. I don't know what it is, but yeah, he's getting paid more than the typical NXT person.
He's getting paid a lot because he gave up a New Japan deal,
right.
Which he admit. Yeah. So, you know, of course he wants to stay at NXT because he's making great money for what he's doing. He's
getting
making
all that merch money right now, man.
Yeah, he's probably making comparable to New Japan money. His body is, he's working less of a physical style than he was working in Japan. There are no politics, it appears anyway, in NXT, and he's probably having a lot of fun. Like, why wouldn't you stay there? Because, you know, you go up to the main roster, sure, he's going to make a little more money, but he's going to have to deal with the politics. He's probably not going to have as much fun in the ring. He's probably not going to have a whole lot of friends up there right away. So, yeah, if you're a guy like Finn Balor, why wouldn't you want to stay on the main roster forever?
It's funny you say that about politics, because Finn Balor, I've talked to him twice. I've been around him once. You will never hear anybody say a bad word about Finn Balor. He's like the most likable guy that they have.
Yeah.
So I don't. Yeah. I mean, and so many people respect his work as well that if they are going to complain about him and everything, it's like to themselves, like he'll grumble in the corner because like you guys ain't coming in and taking my spot. You know, whatever, but that's about as far as it's going to go because Finn's lovable, man. He flat out is.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this up too. So for a while now, you and I have been on the same page about different things on the WWE network and why aren't they catering to this and that. You even brought up like, why don't they have some of this stuff from, you know, the Attitude Era up there and anything.
Yeah.
Have you been watching some of the new shows, like the 24 series and the Table for Three?
No, and well, I did see the Table for Three with Gene Okerlund, Paul Orndorff, and Roddy Piper. And I think somebody forgot to tell Paul Orndorff that there was a camera on because he seemed more interested in eating throughout the it was almost as
the
if
– The man's hungry, okay?
It was almost as if the man hadn't eaten for a week because not only did he, but I think he ate Okerlund and Piper's food as well during the Table for Three. And it's something else if you haven't seen it.
Well, I didn't watch that one yet, but I did watch two of them. I watched one that had – it was Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler, and Ryback.
Oh, my goodness. How was that?
It was fantastic.
Okay.
And then I saw the one that has Kevin Owens, Cesaro – and Dean Ambrose.
I would like to see that one.
That's a very interesting one.
That's
as
a
well.
CZW reunion right there.
Yeah, and they talk about CZW on there, and they
flat out
say CZW. Flat out. I mean, Ambrose tells a story about how he would bargain with his body. Like, okay, so I'm going to do a match. You're going to pay me X amount. Okay, but you're going to But if I do a barbed wire match, you'll pay me this much more. Okay, but if I do something that also includes glass, you'll do this much more. Or if I do fire and all the other stuff, then it's this much more. He goes, but you have to make these deals with your body about it because it gets so rough.
Yeah, welcome to the indies. Welcome to CZW. Yeah, no, I haven't seen those. And it's not that I think they're bad shows. I haven't had time to watch them.
Right.
I did watch the Eric Bischoff special. I was away that week and there was just nothing on TV, and I'm like, let me fire up the laptop and see if I can get the crappy Wi-Fi connection in the hotel room. I was at least able to sustain watching Bischoff on there. And I did enjoy that, although at this point, I think I've heard, I've seen enough Eric Bischoff interviews to last me for a while, because they're all the same, and it's not any discredit to him, but he gets asked the same questions.
Yeah.
He gives the same answers. I mean, I saw it the first time on the R video shoot, which was 5 hours, so you're not going to get more comprehensive than that. He was on the Flair show recently. He was on the JBL show. I mean, they're all the same exact questions. They're all the same exact answers. You know, again, no discredit to him, but I mean, I've heard it already. I've heard enough.
Yeah, it just get a little bit tiresome. I saw the first half of that. I got to see the second part of it.
The second part is much better, actually.
Oh, okay. And then, like, the 24 series that they've done, they've done some incredible work there. I watched the one that they did. There was the behind the scenes of Takeover Brooklyn.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. I did see the one with Daniel Bryan back at WrestleMania.
Yep, that's fantastic. Yep. Fantastic stuff.
Yep. And there was one on Roman Reigns. Wasn't there one on Roman Reigns?
Yeah, there was one on Roman Reigns as well. I mean, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I want to see when it comes to new programming. I mean,
definitely.
I think all of those are home runs.
Yep, definitely. I mean,
the stuff that they talk about on that table for three, I'm like blown away. I mean, you got Ryback sitting there talking about, or I don't know who, I think it was Ryback that brought it up. He was talking about the curse of the Intercontinental Championship.
Wow.
You know, and plus, he also tells a story about why he doesn't ride with Daniel Bryan anymore and Cody Rhodes, because they would take like little things and twist them into like these huge stories and like try to spread it in the locker room. And
yeah,
he was just like, I can't do it anymore. Like, I'll give this one away. And sorry for everybody I'm doing, but so I guess Ryback made some kind of, he was working out before Raw one time. They're all like at a gym working out, and he was joking around as he was working out going, I gotta try to impress Brock Lesnar tonight.
Yeah.
Cause Brock's going to be here. So, of course, it became this big joke that they said once they got to the building, like, hey, Ryback took a Cialis because he wants to impress Brock Lesnar.
That's great. That's great. Yeah.
Fantastic stuff. They said that Daniel Bryan's like the meanest guy, because he's like, when it comes to jokes and stories and stuff, that Daniel Bryan ribs everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of got that from his book too, that he ribbed everybody. But yeah, I mean, that the one with Piper and Okerlund and Orndorff, I mean, it was very interesting. But again, Orndorff was a little distracted with the table rolls. So
can you blame the man?
No,
yeah, they're a good wrestler,
and he's earned it.
Yeah, absolutely. So
one of the greatest heels in the business.
So if Raw continues to go down this path, say for another 3 or 4 weeks, what changes, if any, do you think we will get?
I think you're going to see a new world champion. I mean, I think, you know, whether it's his fault or not, the fingers are always pointed at the top guy. I mean, that's why Shawn Michaels used to have nervous breakdowns. It seemed like weekly when he was world champion in the 90s. And he put that on himself. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Seth Rollins is oblivious to it all. Maybe it's a different mentality. But I think you're going to see a lot of fingers pointing at the champ. And I think that's where it's going to end. I think they're going to have to. I mean, they just got to do something. They got to shake something up.
Yeah, I hope they shake up the style a little bit. I mean, to me, the biggest thing that really concerns me that's been going on for a while is the whole even Steven booking. That,
yes.
You know what? Some guys are just going to be stronger at different times. I'm not saying they got to win every week, but guess what? They need to win 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5 times.
I mean, how boring would the NFL be if everybody was mediocre? How boring would baseball be if everybody was mediocre like the Cubs?
What? You just called the Cubs mediocre?
Just kidding.
Oh, my God. You're trying to crush me over here, man. You know what? Yeah, hey, man, I could have gone to TakeOver. I did not, because I can walk to TakeOver if I really, really wanted to. I can drive there in like 3 minutes. Okay. I stayed at home because my Cubs needed me. Okay. And I needed them. I knew I was going to be a wreck if I went to NXT and I'm staring at my phone the entire time.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a lost cause. I will watch TakeOver afterwards. And I watched the Cubs game.
Well, listen, I just read an article on Facebook that says the later you go to bed, the fatter you get. So we got to wrap this up so I can go to bed.
Wow. So you're saying you're becoming a fatty?
I haven't, but I'm saying if at this rate, with as much fun as I'm having here, I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning.
There's one caveat they left out of that. If you stay up late and eat.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I didn't read the fine print.
Yes. Just don't eat if you stay up late. That was always Mick Foley's thing that he said. He goes, yeah, the problem is around midnight or 1 o'clock, he goes, I'd go and eat and I'd put down like 2,000 or 3,000 calories.
Is that what he would say?
Yeah. It's not good.
That would do it.
Just to warn everybody, that's not what you want to be doing. So everybody can find Eric's work and all the work of his fine staff over at CamelClutchBlog.com.
Indeed.
And, including, what are some of the newer things you got up there? I know you did some recently, and you did another guessing WrestleMania column.
Yeah, those are always really a lot of fun, and those are always really seems to do really well because everybody likes to have fun and play WrestleMania fantasy booker. But yeah, I took a shot at guessing the WrestleMania card. And I mean, without giving the whole thing away, I took a look at the Brock Lesnar Undertaker situation. And here's a match that they were saving for WrestleMania. And not only has Vince McMahon decided to take it off WrestleMania and move it up, it's because he's got some kind of a big idea for Brock Lesnar. And what people are really missing here is that in order for him to take that match and move it up to SummerSlam and then move it up to Hell in a Cell, he's had to book more dates on Brock. He's investing a lot of money in order to, for whatever reason, to get Brock Lesnar free for WrestleMania. That's not for Roman Reigns. That's not for John Cena. That's not for Braun Strowman. That's for a guy like The Rock. That's how I see it. So I'm predicting that we're going to see Rock and Brock. And I know, the tea leaves all point to Triple H and The Rock, but they can do that next year. They can even play it, get an angle out of Rock and Brock and lead it to Triple H and The Rock. But I think we're going to see it this year at Mania.
Well, you got that. You've got different articles about TakeOver Respect, which you have not watched yet, but somebody on your site obviously did. And and you've got some football stuff on there as well when it comes to fantasy.
Yeah, we got some football stuff. I mean, we're constantly churning out good stuff. I mean, I couldn't be more lucky. I mean, I have such a great team of writers that are constantly churning out stuff, and I've always had this idea of trying to diversify it with fantasy football stuff and NFL stuff. But at the core, it's always going to be mainly wrestling. And and really, I try and post up a new blog every day. Generally, I get 2 to 3 up there a day. Different opinions. You're not always going to agree with them, but it's all talking about wrestling, and it's all in good fun. So hopefully your readers will check it out.
Absolutely. So always appreciate the time, man. You never know where these conversations are going to go. We like have no prep work or whatever. So it's always an interesting conversation, though.
As long as the recorders work and we're in good shape. As long as you don't have me recording your show.
Yeah, we'll go over that later. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
No, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you. Have a nice day.